Calling the next case, County of Henrico versus Colon.
Good morning.
Good morning. You have.
I'm Scott Ford with Ford Richardson, and I'm here on behalf of the County of Henrico. It's a pleasure and honor to be before you.
Mr. Ford, you have 15 minutes. Do you wish to attempt to reserve any for rebuttal?
Yes, Judge. If I could reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal. The county's alleged two errors made by the full commission in this case. This case deals with a 38-year-old pregnant school teacher who tripped or stumbled on steps as she was leaving or descending bus steps. She was a school teacher, and the commission, in a divided opinion, was written by Commissioner Marshall. Commissioner Newman concurred, and Commissioner Rappaport dissented.
That's about as divided as it can get.
Yeah, you don't see that very often out of the commission. And our position, the county's position, is that one, there was error by the commission in permitting Mr. Holland, an engineer, to offer expert testimony. And number two, that the commission erred in finding that the step was defective. And I just would like to make a few brief comments related to both of those errors.
There's no dispute that we have an injury by accident that arose during the course of employment. It's just solely the question of whether these particular stairs are a risk of the neighborhood or and the evidentiary ruling, that's it.
That's exactly right. With respect to Mr. Holland is an engineer. He provided testimony as to the international building code. He candidly acknowledged that it had no relevance to buses. He said it dealt with buildings, and I asked him at least a couple times in the record. He said, no, the International Building Code does not apply to buses. It only applies to buildings.
You cite the Virginia Rules of Evidence, and you cite a lot of cases involving trial courts dealing with evidentiary issues. How do those rules square with Rule 2.2 of the Commission that basically says all of that's well and good, but none of that applies here?
Yeah, well, generally what the commission does is that it is a looser standard, but they there's plenty of case law that talks about that they do rely upon the rules of evidence, and they do rely upon the rules that govern courts of record.
For a trial court, not the commission, yeah. It's an abuse of discretion standard regarding experts. So this, would you at least concede that we start with abuse of discretion plus, given that it's the commission?
I don't know about plus, but I do agree that it's an abuse of discretion standard. I don't know what the plus is, but
well, Rule 2.2 says there has to be. It can't just be that they violated a rule of evidence.
Right. No, I agree with you. I agree with you, and I do believe it's an abuse of discretion with respect to permitting Mr. Holland, an engineer, apply a set of standards that didn't apply to buses. He further acknowledged that he was not aware of the percentage of steps in the community that were not in compliance with the International Building Code.
If these bus steps had been what I'll call, for lack of a better description, normal steps, steps that meet the building code for residences, would it be your position that regardless of where those steps were, whether they were on a bus or in a park or in a building, that would be a risk of the neighborhood because everybody encounters normal steps every day?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Sure. Yeah. Assume they're not bus steps.
Okay.
Assume that although they may be on a bus, they are steps no different than the steps that we're going to walk down in a minute, or that you would walk up in the James Center, that you would walk up and down if you decided that one of the exercise. They're normal building steps.
Right.
Would it matter from a risk of the neighborhood perspective, given that the rise, the depth are all, quote, normal steps, would it matter where they were, or would that always be a risk of the neighborhood? Whether they were inside, outside, on a bus, on a train, in a plane?
Yeah, I think I understand your question. And the answer is I do not think it would matter. I mean, Virginia is not a positional risk state. So we have to start from the premise that you have to demonstrate that there was some added risk of your employment that increased your risk. And so in this particular case, there was no defect with these steps. And I think what's interesting, if you look closely at the commission's opinions, both the deputy commissioner and the full commission, the deputy commissioner on page 7 of his opinion says that yet to this claimant, she perceived they were steeper, to which she would normally encounter. Indeed, they were, in her perception, even if so slightly. I mean, I think that demonstrates that what the deputy found was there was this perception. And the position of the county would be that that's not the proper standard, whether there's a perception. It needs to be an objective standard.
And given that we're in agreement that if they had been, even if they were unusual for a bus, normal, quote-unquote normal building steps on the bus, that would be a risk of the neighborhood absent some defect, or if maybe the bus were moving or something that made them unusual despite their normal dimensions. Given that didn't she have some burden to demonstrate that these steps were different and not just in perception from normal steps? She had some, as you just said, need to show objectively they weren't normal steps.
Correct.
Well, then how does Mr. Holland's testimony not help accomplish that? That he testifies not by perception, by these are what normal building steps would be, these are the measurements as demonstrated by the photographs of these steps, therefore they're different. And so now the question may be, are bus steps a risk of the neighborhood? But on the question of are these normal steps, not just by her perception, but are they normal steps, Mr. Holland has something useful to say.
Well, he has something that may be useful as an advocate on behalf of the claimant, but I don't believe he has something useful to say to assist the trier of fact, because he lacks foundation. The opinions he expresses are not relevant.
Well,
if you look at the record...
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because sitting here today, without having read the record, I don't know what the height of a normal building step is.
Okay.
And so I could have looked at the height of the bus steps, and I might have had the perception that you say, that you've already said, shouldn't count. It needs to be objective. And he tells me that, yes, a normal building step is this height with this run. These steps aren't that.
Yeah.
If I don't know that just off the top of my head, what the height of a normal building step is as a potential trier of fact or a commissioner, then doesn't what he have to say have some value? It may not be necessary. I might not need an expert, but how is that irrelevant?
Well, it's irrelevant because the standard that he uses does not apply to buses, number one. Number two, he's 8.01401.3b prohibits expert opinions on any opinion which constitutes a conclusion of law. And you can dance around it. I think ultimately he is attempting to offer an opinion whether these steps in this bus constitute an added risk, whether these steps are different than outside in the general public.
If all of the commission took from his testimony was they are different height and depth than normal building steps, why is that a conclusion of law? Because he gave the measurements, and he just happens to be the person who knows what the height of a normal building step is.
Well, it's a conclusion of law because the burden of the claimant is to demonstrate that she says different things, but initially she says that it was the steepness, that's Joint Appendix 16. Then she says they were steeper than I anticipated and they were small, Joint Appendix at 30. And then when I pressed her, she said at Joint Appendix 33 and 34, it was merely the steepness. The problem that I have with the expert, and I, when you go through the record, I would reference 77 and 78, and then page 94, where the expert acknowledges to me that he's looked at the International Building Code, but that if the Virginia Construction Code conflicted, that it would control, and that there are also a myriad of other standards. The Historic Code, the ADA, the anti-A117.1, the BOCA, the OSHA Code, and all of these codes. He picked one. And so you have to have foundation for the opinions you express. And I'll just mention, too, the Virginia Construction Well, let me back up. This steepness was 9 inches, and you can see the photograph in the joint appendix at 210, the actual photograph she says she was stepping onto. It was 9 inches. The Virginia Construction Code is 8 1/4 with a nose extension. OSHA is 8 3/4. I mean, these are negligible differences, and that's why the deputy commissioner makes that point that this was a negligible difference. But from her perception, he found it significant. Virginia doesn't have a perception standard. If we did, I'd lose every case where somebody said, well, I perceived that there was water on the floor. But in fact, there wasn't. It's the claimant's burden.
Well, but right, it was the claimant's burden. She had, under the case law, one way to recover on a steps case is to demonstrate that they're not standard height steps.
Correct.
So she wanted to offer evidence that they weren't standard height steps.
Correct.
And she did.
Correct.
The commission accepted that they weren't standard height steps.
Correct.
Okay. Is there anything as a matter of law that is wrong with that ruling?
You keep pressing me on the expert issue, and again, you offer expert opinion to assist the trier fact, and it has to have foundation, and it has to have relevance. This expert offered testimony on the International Building Code. Now, I would imagine everyone in this room from the age of 5 to 18 encountered bus steps. They're common to the neighborhood. And so having the expert come in and offer that opinion really shifted the focus of what should have been the determination and what the commission should have been after, whether or not the steps constituted a risk that was greater than the exposure to the general public.
Well, and she had testified, and I think the only testimony about how often somebody uses bus steps from either party that anybody offered was hers, that 5 times in her adult life, which, given I believe her age, would be at least over the last 10 years, had she been on bus steps. And as a school teacher, I would think she would probably be exposed to bus steps more commonly than the average person.
You and I agree on that point. I found that hard to believe, yes.
All right. So if that, given that evidence viewed in the light most favorable to the claimant, which we must, because the commission, or at least 2/3 of the commission, seemed to find it credible, is the issue whether bus steps are a risk of the neighborhood? And then if the only evidence on the frequency that somebody has encountered them is hers, why isn't that sufficient to say they're not a risk of the neighborhood?
Well, I don't think you look to her individual exposure. You have to have an objective standard, whether or not the risk is common to the neighborhood.
And would risk commons in neighborhood be something that we would expect a majority of people to encounter on a majority of days?
Majority of people on majority of days? Yeah, probably so.
So unless we can say as a matter of law that a majority of people on a majority of days would encounter bus steps, then they're not a risk of the neighborhood.
I probably would concede that, yeah. But, you know, it's interesting, Commissioner Newman, in his concurring opinion, where he talks about steps being ubiquitous and the question whether or not they constitute an added risk, and he actually cites the Supreme Court's 1989 opinion where the court found that an added risk wasn't established. I thought that was telling because I agree with his framework, how he set it up. But I would submit that they are ubiquitous, that school buses, I mean, I think I passed municipal and school buses, probably 10 of them on the way to court today. So they are common to the neighborhood.
And it's been largely my fault, but you're deep into your rebuttal time.
Sorry.
And I'll probably give you a little extra time because I took up most of it.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Reed?
May it please the court, Brody Reed on behalf of the appellee, Brooke Kalon. This boils down to two issues, the admissibility of the expert for his limited testimony on establishing IBC codes and what is open to the general public as an anchor or potential consideration for the commission as a finder of fact.
Do you agree even if there were bus stair codes or which were testified to by and these steps didn't meet those requirements, but did by happenstance be the same height as normal building steps, that your recovery would be barred as a risk of the neighborhood?
I want to make sure I understand your premise, Your Honor. If the bus steps in question
were normal building stair
match the ICB codes,
yes,
the National Building Codes, would we be barred?
Yes.
I don't think that's an issue that we have to reach today, but the answer is I don't know. And the reason why is I do think there still is an argument, and there has been commission case law, where violation of building code creates a defect. And so if applicable building codes creates a defect, that is something that's different than maybe what's common to the neighborhood. I think it's two different analysis. So the court need not reach that answer before getting to the answer in this case, because our question is the abnormal height, does that create a risk that's not common to the neighborhood? The defect analysis, I think, is a slightly different analysis, and I think the court could find that if they were required to meet a certain code and they didn't, then that would be a defect. And that would be a different analysis rather than common to the neighborhood. Just as presence of water or a structural defect in it would be a different analysis. Here, we have varying heights, and the question is it common to the neighborhood? Counsel pointed to the 1989 Supreme Court decision in Chesterfield County versus Johnson, where the Supreme Court reversed the Court of Appeals to highlight the distinction between the two concepts of in the course and scope and arising out of. And obviously in Johnson, merely turning on a stair, being on a stair, positional risk is not the analysis. It's arising out of, and it's an actual risk test. So simply the act of turning, which is the act of turning, bending, lifting, absent more, is never enough in Virginia. And the Supreme Court in 89 took Johnson to do that. It wasn't a defect in the step. It wasn't abnormal height. He just turned and twisted his leg. That wasn't enough. We don't have that here. We have factual findings by the commission that they were not uniform, abnormal right there. They were taller, and they were narrow. All right. They compared the IBC codes, which are 7 and 11, run-rise, and they were 2 inches taller and 2 inches shorter, making it a steeper step. And when you look at the cases cited in brief, the lack of compensability and arising out of was often a failure of the testimony or evidence to link the defect or abnormality with the injury. And in our case, consistently, the causal connection between the two was the claimant's unimpeached testimony between the steepness of the step causing the fall. Joint Appendix 16, Joint Appendix 30, Joint Appendix 34. The steepness, the steepness, the steepness. It was the steepness of the steps that caused my fall and my size 10 shoe. What pressed about the pregnancy, she said it could have, but she never really wavered from the causal connection, which was it was the steepness that caused my fall.
Well, and if it's the steepness and the pregnancy combined, it's still compensable, right?
Correct, and we look at the totality of the circumstances in which the employment places them and whether or not that's an actual risk. So it can be the steepness alone, it can be the steepness plus it could have been the pregnancy, it can be the steepness plus the size 10 shoe on a smaller step, it can be any combination of those two. But all we need is that it is an actual risk that is particular to the employment. These steps, experienced 5 times, are not common to the neighborhood. And in fact, when compared to the governing statutes on general public buildings, they're 2 inches too tall and they're 2 inches too narrow. That's the difference. We're not arguing a building code violation, and Mr. Holland was qualified as an expert to testify in an area of expertise knowledge. How a code applies, what it means.
How much leeway does the commission have under Rule 2.2?
A large amount, Your Honor. And I think the case sites say but as long as the minimum due process requirements are met, and they were in this case. He was disclosed, he was deposed, and then he testified.
So they could pick anybody they want to, and it's unreviewable?
No.
That seems too far to me. So I'm asking you for what's the outer limit?
I do think you said earlier, Your Honor, that it was abuse plus. And I think that's probably where it is. It's not absolute, but it is more than just abuse of discretion because the case cited are civil cases, trial court cases. The code sections cited, the rules of evidence cited are all that apply in our circuit court and our appellate courts that way. They don't apply to the commission. And the distinction is we don't have a jury and the commission's role is different. They don't call balls and strikes. They're a fact-finding body. Therefore, they have to be given leeway to do so. I don't know of a word choice to give more than the abuse of discretion plus, but it must be something more than abuse of discretion. Here, they were told about the expert's opinion. They were permitted to depose him. They were permitted to voir dire and do everything they would need to present evidence as to why he should be rejected.
Having injected the phrase, is it more accurate to say it's an abuse of discretion it's still just an abuse of discretion, but just because it would be an abuse of discretion for the a trial court under the rules of evidence doesn't mean it's an abuse of discretion here.
Correct. I don't think there's a parallel. I think there needs to be something more. What that something more is, I don't think has been evaluated well in the case law, but I do think it is something more. But here, I don't think we have an abuse of discretion. It was for the fact finder to weigh or reject it. And in the Virginia Polytechnic versus Pondosa case, the court has cited that they will weigh evidence and will take those kind of credibility findings from the expert. The fact finder in this case is a deputy commissioner, and they are free to accept or reject an expert's testimony. It can be cross-examined, it can be voir dire, it can be set through deposition.
Well, that's not right, is it? The fact finder is not the deputy commissioner. The fact finder is the commission, whether they adopt it or not, whether they adopt credibility findings, whether
Correct.
They're bound by the magic language from Goodyear. The fact finder is the commission.
I agree, and I think I misspoke. The initial recipient of those facts, the gatekeeper who applies an abuse of discretion plus standard, is the deputy commissioner. And the reason why it's a higher standard than, say, the trial court is because it's going to not a jury. I believe that's why. One, it's administrative code, but two, it's not a jury. So I think the gatekeeper role of the deputy commissioner, who is ultimately allowing evidence in for the ultimate fact finder, the commission in this case, is allowed to take this in, and there's less risk that it would unduly prejudice people hearing it because it's free to be accepted or rejected. In this case, it is not ultimate conclusion of law. It is merely evidence, which is, as you point out, not necessary, but it is evidence. It's probative and relevant to the issue of what is generally encountered in the neighborhood. And the only evidence in this case about what is generally encountered in the neighborhood came from the claimant. Claimant's own testimony, five times in her teaching career, and from the IBC codes.
But arising out of is a question of law that we reviewed de novo.
Correct, Your Honor.
Why aren't bus steps common to the neighborhood?
They're not common to the neighborhood. Well, and I think, Your Honor...
And there is testimony that these are common bus steps.
There is testimony from the transit assistant transit director that they comply with some regulations. And the regulations are in there. There's no measurements in those regulations, by the way. On page 67, which is what was admitted by Deputy Commissioner Tabb, they're not as clear as the International Building Codes, which have a 7-11. Right? They just say they have to be kind of similar. So it's interesting that they comply with the statute because it's not necessarily, or the regulations, because it's not necessarily as clear, black and white, measurable. But I think, Your Honor, this court, 2009, the Haley versus Springs Global U.S. Incorporated, took the right approach. And it's in the holding there, or the commentary, is that in deciding whether a step case arises out of the employment, no two cases are identical. And to a certain extent, they must stand alone. So when we look at the case law, you can have differing effects because you can't, there's not a one size fits all. There's a question of, is there abnormality? Did that abnormality cause the injury? We got to put the causal link in there too. Was there a defect? Was it believable? Was it inconsistent testimony that was reconciled against the claimant? You can't, there isn't, unfortunately, a bright line step rule. And I think the court doesn't need to reach one, nor do I think the commission was trying to reach one in this case. And in every other case that's been decided, they've said, under these facts, the claimant didn't hold a burden. Or under these facts, we find a causal connection. Unfortunately, steps don't lend themselves to a bright-line rule because of the condition, size, shape, etc. Common to the neighborhood, I don't think this court needs to reach a bright-line rule in order to uphold the decision below. And it's because there were factual findings which are binding on appeal. The factual findings here in this case were that steps were taller and more narrow, Joint Appendix 254, than a normal staircase. Whether or not that constituted an actual risk, that's a binding finding. Whether or not that constituted an actual risk requires testimony and a link between the two, that a rational mind could find a causal connection between the abnormality and the injury. Again, the full commission agreed, and this is where it is a binding, that this first steps had certain measurements, 9.5 rise, 9.38 run. The second step had 9, and the 9 1/8 run, 8 3/4, and 9 1/6 run. They found that they were not uniform, they were taller, they were more narrow than that of a regular normal step, and that's Joint Appendix 293. These binding fact findings are supported by credible evidence because we have the actual measurements. There's no dispute that these were the measurements. We have the pictures in there. The measurements were stipulated to. And on Joint Appendix 209, I think the commission could take a look at and did, the steepness. There's a shot of where it's going down. So all of that combined supports credible evidence to make those binding conclusions of fact. The only remaining question becomes under the case law is whether or not the testimony or evidence is connected to this unusual configuration of tall or narrow steps. And here, obviously, we did. Testimony on Joint Appendix 30, the steepness is what caused it, confirmed on Joint Appendix 16. In 30, they reference it's consistent with what she said in her deposition. And on 34, on cross-examination, she didn't waver. So what we have, and it's irrelevant that there may be something slightly inconsistent in a medical record here or there, because that reconciliation of conflicting evidence is within the purview of the commission to resolve, and that is a binding finding on appeal. And so here, this case is much more like Reserve Life versus Hosley, where there was an ascending a rock step. It was just a little bit higher than the usual step. It's a 1968 Supreme Court decision that upheld benefits. As she was ascending a slightly higher step, it was an actual risk of employment. They found that that, combined with some medical evidence, connected the two. Most importantly, in 2002, this court, citing Baudet versus Prince George County School Board, a commission opinion, this court actually upheld a bus driver felt descending steps, nearly similar, unfortunately, to our case, that were, as she said, quote, they were just different than the ones I was used to. The height, I think, was different, not like normal steps in the bus. Different than you say are home steps or standardized steps. And based on that, the commission reversed the deputy. And they made factual findings of the oddity of the steps. With that presentation of binding factual findings, this court upheld the actual risk of those abnormal steps, the causative nature, she said it was the height, that caused the fall and resulting injury to a leg. Eerily, obviously, fall down steps, you would expect to be likely a leg injury. And so that's why we fall into those cases, and that's why with the binding factual decisions, the relevant expert admissible evidence onto what ordinary steps might be common to the neighborhood suggested that the international building codes can represent some evidence, but are not necessary. The commission could have reached out on their own, but it doesn't mean it's excluded because they could have reached out on their own. Gives us a case where it should be affirmed on appeal. And I'm happy to answer any questions or address any of the other cases cited by the defense.
Thank you, Mr. Reed.
Thank you.
Mr. Ford.
Thank you, Judge Russell. Briefly, the counsel mentioned an argument that the he talks about this unusual configuration, and I think it just confuses the issue. The issue, very clearly, before the commission was whether that step, a single step that she described, was an added risk. Whether it is indeed an added risk, and it's presented. You can see the photograph. Photograph tells 1,000 words on Joint Appendix 210. It's not the configuration. She didn't testify to that. She said very clearly, if you look at the Joint Appendix at page 16, the step was steeper than I thought. 30, she said it was steeper than I thought, and they were small. And then I questioned her about, are you claiming both? Are you claiming just the one? And she then went back to, no, it's steep. And that's 33 and 34. Counsel mentioned the medical record, and I agree, in the medical record, she says it was the last step. But at the commission, the issue is whether that step, where she stepped onto the no trespassing 9 inches, whether that constitutes an added risk. It's not a configuration. It's not a constellation of issues. It is whether 9 inches constitutes an added risk, and we would assert that it does not. Number one. Number two, counsel argued that...
Other than the description of it being a little bit, do we know what the difference was of the rock step and Hosey from a standard step?
Yeah. Well, counsel mentioned two cases. He mentioned Hosey. Hosey, the added risk there was that these were rock steps. The court does not identify, my review of the case, any readings on the actual rise or run. Counsel mentioned a 2002 Court of Appeals case. I think he's talking about Grayson School Board versus Cornett. That case is distinguishable here. You were dealing with steps that were angled and different from normal bus steps.
But in the case you rely on heavily, and you've gone over, but I promised you an extra minute, and you
did
it.
Yeah.
In Bernard, and Lexus for some reason calls it Bernardo, but it's Bernard, mm-hmm. the TGI Fridays, everybody's favorite quesadilla case. Then Judge Kelsey, writing for the majority and talking about risk of the neighborhood, said the key thing in a steps case is, one of the key things we've always held is, a different height matters. And so that's a case you rely on, and that's what Judge Kelsey said. Granted, you can argue it's dicta in that case because that doesn't have a whole lot to do with a quesadilla, but... And he cites Hosey for the proposition that it's a different height. What's wrong with that?
What do you mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, I would concede that, that an abnormal height can constitute an added risk in Virginia. I'm not I'm not backing away from that. But my argument is that this was not an abnormal height.
Gotcha.
And that the, you know, look at Grayson. Grayson talks about they were angled and different from normal bus steps. This was a normal bus step. And in fact, the testimony from the Director of Transportation for the county, he made it very clear that this was a, it was a newer bus, and that it in fact was consistent with the bus standards. The Mr. Holland wasn't familiar with the bus standards, and you can see through the record when I asked Mr. Holland about the Virginia Construction Code 8 1/4 inch, OSHA 8 3/4, the Virginia Construction Code trumps the International Building Code. Hotels, motels, dormitories are all guided by it. I mean, we're dealing with half an inch to 3/4 inch difference.
Mr. Ford,
we're done.
You can finish it up, but
no, that's all I have. Unless you have any final questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Come down and greet council.